Jesus' tone of voice. I'm curious right now about Jesus' tone of voice in the gospel stories. Whether we know it or not, when we read the gospels to ourselves, we take on a tone for Jesus' proclamations or his interactions with people. We imagine what he sounded like. So last week, I explored what did Jesus sound like when he rescued Peter from sinking. Remember, Peter walks across the water, and then he realizes he's walking across water, and he panics, and he starts to sink. Jesus rescues him and then says, "You of little faith, why did you doubt?" And I thought, I suggested, well, did he say that scornfully? Probably not. And I proposed that he said it sorrowfully, picking up on Isaiah's observation that he was the man of sorrows. Well, Kathy Christie gave a lot of pushback to that and said, no, he said it with sense of humor. And when I got home, Chloe said the same thing, that she was in the Kathy Christie camp on that one. So we don't know, but it's very interesting. It's interesting about ourselves and who we think Jesus is, what the tone of voice is like. I was struck by this a while ago when I was reading a book called The Great Books by David Denby. Denby is the film critic for the New York Times. And he, in his late 40s, early 50s, went back to his college, Columbia University. And at Columbia University, in the first 2 years, you take a great books course. You read through all the great books, so Homer and Aeschylus and Jane Austen and Shakespeare. And so as part of that, he had to reread, as an adult, he's Jewish, by the way, the Bible. And he was struck by Jesus in a whole new way. He wasn't converted to Christianity, but he gained a new respect. And in particular, what struck him as a Jewish man was Jesus' wit, his sense of humor that is so often missed. And I went away with that thinking, wow, you know, if a Jewish guy is picking up on humor that most of us don't catch, maybe there are things that Jesus is doing and saying that I need to grow into a little bit. So I want to keep playing with Jesus' tone of voice in the hopes that it expands our sense of who he is and what's going on in these passages. Now, one of the most vexing passages in all of the Gospels is today's Gospel reading. What is Jesus up to? Now, I can think of two ways to interpret today's passage, both of them edifying, ultimately. One is that Jesus didn't know what he was doing, and he learned something by this interaction. The second is that he did know, but he was setting it up so that everybody around him could learn something. So let me read it again and then try and interpret it in these two different ways, and then also invite you to think about, well, maybe there's a third way. I'm sure there is, at least. A Canaanite woman from that region came out and started shouting, "Have mercy on me, Lord, Son of David. My daughter is tormented by a demon." But he did not answer her at all. And his disciples came and urged him, saying, "Send her away, for she keeps shouting after us." He answered, "I was sent only to the lost sheep of the house of Israel." But she came and knelt before him, saying, "Lord, help me." He answered, "It is not fair to take the children's food and throw it to the dogs." She said, "Yes, Lord, yet even the dogs eat the crumbs that fall from their master's table." Then Jesus answered her, "Woman, great is your faith. Let it be done for you as you wish." And her daughter was healed instantly. Now, one way to look at this is that Jesus is learning from the experience. I believe that Jesus was human, like you and me, but without sin. Never once did he sin. But he is human. And he understands, in one interpretation, that his mission from God is to go to the lost sheep of Israel. That's it. And he follows that faithfully. And what happens in this interaction, in this interpretation of the human Jesus without sin, is that human Jesus realizes in this moment that his mission is beyond the boundaries of the people of Israel. So what the source and the ghost, the other two persons of the Trinity, knew, and the Word knew in the Word's divine sense, was not yet clear to the Word made flesh, to Jesus the human. And in this moment, in this interaction, he discovers that his mission goes beyond the boundaries. And so he heals. So the good news here, if you're following this interpretation, is that if you follow this logically, that means that when we are mistaken, which we all are from time to time, it is not a sin. Jesus here was mistaken, yet he did not sin. He opened his heart and healed her. That's one way to interpret it. It's the way that Chris Olsen interprets it, and he says it's one of his three or four most favorite, most moving passages, precisely because it reveals that Jesus was human and that Jesus learned. Now, another way to understand this passage is that Jesus has a kind of playful omniscience. He is masterful at, has a masterful emotional and social intelligence and a sure sense of God's providence. And he's lovingly playing with everyone. He's going along with a little smile, perhaps. And he's doing this primarily for the edification of the disciples. He knows ultimately he's going to heal that woman. He also knows that the disciples are biased in this way. And this is a playful way of getting them to learn a new lesson while healing this woman. So it's sort of like saying to the disciples, okay, look how it feels when I blow her off. Does that feel like the right thing to do? Knowing all along he's going to cure her. It's like a benevolent, great April Fool's joke. He knows what's going to happen. So here's a setup to slowly expand the heart of all who witness it. Now, this is plausible to me, too, because one of the fundamental things about reading the Gospels is to understand that it always takes two to parable, that there's always a challenge, a disorientation in so many of Jesus' teachings, that we have to enter into it and play with it. And Jesus does this deliberately, time and again. So there are two possibilities to understand what Jesus is up to in this difficult passage. There are probably others. However we get there, and however Jesus got there, this passage, along with the passage from Romans, is fuel for one of our greatest hopes. And that hope is that all, regardless of culture or creed, can be healed, can be brought into the merciful embrace of God. Whether you're a Canaanite, a Jew, a Christian, a Muslim, or increasingly in our world and in our county, a nun, that is, following no creed. Today's passage from Romans is one of the most ringing endorsements of that Christian hope, a hope which must remain that, only a hope, never in this life full knowledge. Nonetheless, we are called to this hope. Paul says, "Just as you were once disobedient to God, but have now received mercy because of the Jews' disobedience, so they have now been disobedient in order that by the mercy shown to you, they too may now receive mercy. For God has imprisoned all in disobedience, so that God may be merciful to all." Amen.